and when applying our ear to its lips, we hear a perpetual murmur from the waves beyond the shore. What does Heschel mean by this wonderful metaphor? If you think you can answer that question, you missed my previous point. Because we can only approximate this wonderful metaphor, or what it might mean. He's given us a clue in the first sentence. Beyond the shore of the known, there is an immense expanse of mystery where only the sense of the ineffable can glide. This, he's saying, is what's so fantastic about the seashell of the mind. If we really look into it, if we really listen, we will hear this perpetual murmur beyond the shore. In other words, there are intimations of immortality written into the human heart and mind. We have what Jung called a religious instinct, with an appetite for the numinous, a sixth sense that recognizes mystery and beauty and the soul's longing for spirit. Just like we have a sense perceptions that tell us what's coming from the body and the intellectual intuitions of thoughts that tell us what's coming from the mind, so too, built into this fantastic seashell of us, is a faculty of perception that Henry Corbin calls the imagination, the mythopoetic imagination. The imaginal for Corbin is a mysterious third, materialized spirit, spiritualized matter, the realm of the subtle body or the soul, what he calls the mundus imaginalis. Now, Jung's whole authorship was an effort to explore this dimension of being. In his autobiography, Jung says that the most important moments of his whole life, the only ones that he really thinks are worth remembering and talking about at the age of 83 when he wrote his autobiography, were the moments when the, quote, imperishable world erupted into this transitory one. Now, by that he means his dreams. The imperishable world. Who's the dream maker? Erupts into this transitory one and gives us images and ideas and feelings and thoughts. In other words, the worlds of spirit and matter, eternity and time, divine and human, come together in the depth of the psyche to produce these strange things that we call dreams or visions or stories or symbols or myths. And they have a truth that's beyond the literal truth or the fabulous truth. It exists in between. It's both and, right? So, we just saw a film that I think actualizes this space of both and between the worlds pretty well. And let's talk a little bit about any place you notice that this third space might have been alluded to or referenced, where one world enters another. Yes?
When he was riding his bicycle at the very end and he's surrounded by children riding a bicycle.
Yes. Okay, that moment was so beautiful, wasn't it? He was like a child again.
He was.
He had just made love to this woman. He had just found out that he could love somebody. I mean, it was just a powerful moment. And he was celebrating. And he was in his own world. He was in his own time. This was Kairos. This was not Kronos. Kronos came in when that clock tower. Okay. Oh, God, I have responsibility. I'm late for the office. Right. That's one very moving moment. Any others? Yes?
The lake where he was. The lake?
The lake? Yeah, where he went under. Before he got beaten up.
Well, even after he was beaten up, it was on that verge of, in that lake, in that transition space.
You mean when he's injured and maybe drowning?
Yeah. I mean, that's it. It was that space between the worlds.
Well, okay, that would qualify, and so would the end of the movie, right?
Yeah.
Especially with the music coming through the loudspeaker. Okay.
When he came in injured with the cut and sat down on the chair and the community sang to him and he recovered.
was such a beautiful scene. Do you remember what he said? I've never felt like this. And that's exactly right. He'd never felt like this. He, if you want to think about it in terms of the imagery of hell I'm going to take you into before dinner, I'm sorry to say. It was the moment when he had gone all the way down into the ninth circle and confronted his demon and been broken by him, but healed them through the human community. I mean, Connie, the image of the, you know, of the dispossessed creature that he had to go back to, down to meet, right, was about as good a personification of the rage demon as you'll find. Now, someone like Connie is channeling dis. He's completely identified with the powers that come through archetypal affect. Ever know anybody like that? Well, it's important not to lose sight of the humanity in such a person. They have not turned evil. They have become possessed by evil. The humanity in them is still there. You could see it in the jail. When Connie broke down and cried, when he saw his children, and when he felt the compassion of Gabriella, he said, I don't hold this against you. I know you've done your best. We all do. Yes?
I'm thinking of the time when he started out with a choir, and he's trying to describe how music comes down.
Yes.
And he is trying to describe his first encounter with music, I think, that was that encounter with the divine when he was very young.
When he was 19, 58 seconds.
Oh.
Is that the one you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Secunda. Yeah, now let's just think about that for a minute. We can bring the music down. What is that music?
Heaven.
Oh, by the way, there's a mistranslation in the notes. The proper translation is, what I thought was there, I realize is here.
Yes.
You know, that struck me immediately. There's a mistranslation. And the heaven I thought was there, I've discovered is here somehow. I will discover is here somehow. So it's that, as it is in heaven, it's here, not there. She's not leaving it there.
Right.
She's saying she's having
on
experience.
Earth,
yes,
in heaven.
On earth as it is in heaven, exactly. Exactly. Yes?
When he saw the rabbit in the snow, where it was shot, he was so...
Say more about that. How did that strike you, or what did it seem to mean to you?
He was just bleeding. Life.
Yeah.
The little white... rabbits, I mean, whatever. And then to hear it shot, it was just...
Oh, I thought that was a beautiful image of pre-traumatic innocence.
He was hopping around in his place.
And he was waving at it and taking a picture, and he was recovering his innocence out in that snowstorm, the early, prior to the trauma, back in the wheat fields. Right? I mean, and that innocent child in all of us is there, usually embedded in the injured child, but it's there. It comes trailing clouds of glory when we rescue that injured child and recover the traumatic memory. Something of that innocence is recovered also. And I thought that was a fabulous. And the way this whole community was, was organized around the destruction of innocence.
And the way he took the photo of the rabbit showed the fixation in time of the reconnection coming back to his home now a second time and coming full circle to reconnect to that which he had disconnected from. He's reconnecting now, and photography can play that role, right, in unfreezing where...
Unfreezing. Yeah, when he jumped off the tower, that memory of, jump, Daniel, jump, there's another moment. Ever gone off a high diving board. You You know, you're between the worlds for a moment.
Okay, I like that.
Yes.
Okay, so I was thinking about the minister and the minister's wife when she was engaging him to find his deeper passions.
Yes.
And I mean, and she was just so feminine for him.
Oh, beautiful.
And just wasn't that the space? Wasn't that the space?
If he could have met her there.
Well, didn't he meet her there?
Oh, yeah, he did meet her there, and then he said it didn't happen.
Oh, it never happened.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's true. Now, who is that entering the picture?
Yes.
That's this. I disavow this. Right? This did not happen. I disconnect from it. Well, Daniel couldn't get to his feelings. He was so scared, right? And Lena perceptively saw that. She said, I know you're scared. I've known it ever since I met you. I've known how scared you are. And don't worry, Daniel.
But then she talked about there's no death.
There's no death.
That was quite interesting.
So that
she is the space.
Right.
Okay. I'm sometimes blown away by the movie Arrival, if you're familiar with that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The idea that for some people time collapses. And present, past, and future are available.
Uh-huh.
It's something I don't know other people, or it's how I was as a child, and I got mirrored in that movie.
Really?
The Arrival. So watching Lena talk to him about, don't worry, Daniel, I know ever since my parents died,
yes.
There is no death.
Right.
I see her angels. And then at the end when she says, I think my grandfather will have a pain. So she knows when she's pregnant. She
That's
knows
right.
When life is coming. She knows when death is coming. She knows
yes.
When and there's a realm that's real about that for trauma.
That to me felt completely authentic.
Absolutely.
I had no doubt that Lena knew those things from the very beginning. And you know, some children are just porous and open.
And if you've lost your parents like she did.
Yeah. You've been broken open. Yes.
Could you speak to what happened with the wife of the minister? When she appeared to be losing touch with reality, at that point, I was very concerned about if she was going to be lost.
I wasn't. I mean, she was completely shut down and unwilling, unable at that point.
She had to leave him to regain herself. I didn't want her to stay there.
No, but that was part of her leaving him, and he knew it. She was no longer in her eyes. But that was after he took the choir away from and she thought he had destroyed everything that she was so unwilling. Yeah.
But she wasn't lost. I mean,
No. She was lost to him.
Mm-hmm.
But she was finding herself.
That was very much.
One of the things that was disturbing to me, which I've talked with some others about, is the lack of, you know, maybe inner and outer, but protective, like civil authority. I mean,
right.
And I was an emergency worker in Vermont for a while. And so when people need protection, or, you know, there's a rapist about, or, you know, like when he was, when the disc guy was, what's his name?
Connie.
Was ramming it, and I said, where the hell is the sheriff? You know? But, you know, and of course, it did allow the story to kind of unfold.
Right.
But it's probably something we may get to on Monday, too, is when there's a collapse of protective authority,
mm-hmm.
that's a real concern. I mean, both inwardly and outwardly, when that doesn't work inside of us or it doesn't work outside.
Absolutely, because you see, what happens is that when the demons are unleashed without protective authority, I mean, you saw the protective authority finally when he got jailed.
Right.
But he had to beat somebody to within an inch of a slice to get jailed. But protective authority does intervene and recreate a boundary between, you know, just vitriolic rage and violence and vulnerability. It's, at least it's supposed to.
That's right.
When it's working properly.
Right.
We see that in the minister. He just clamped down on whatever he thought was chaos.
And right.
Yeah, but that wasn't effective. That was impotent.
Yeah.
I just want to say something about Lena in her presentation. She immediately presents him as an archetypal figure. She gives him, presents him with that lottery ticket. That's the fortune. She presents his...
The bingo
ticket. Yeah, the bingo, the lottery, right. That was just
I like the end of the movie when the boy who's
that's the right word, disenabled.
Huh.
You understand?
Yes.
Because the you're right, the whole community, I would say, was under the aegis of dis. In the sense that they were dissociating from the truth and the reality. And why were they dissociating? Because if they had really addressed the reality, they would have had to feel something. And we would all prefer, I hate to tell you this, not to feel stuff.
But they didn't have any other, until the other came, there was no visible way to survive in the community and tell the truth. I mean, they were keeping on Lena.
Yeah.
You know, they were living her body's truth.
Yeah. Lena living her body's truth, and if ever there were an emotionally literate, transparent, lovely kind of person of integrity, it was Lena.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't see one false note in her.
Except that all they had, somebody, one person just has to catch her in the bathroom helping the young boy who's defecated and turn that around to something normal.
I know.
Mm-hmm. What that was a very kind, I thought that was beautiful. I mean,
it's a beautiful moment, a beautiful scene, absolutely.
So,
yes.
That's the purpose of the bride and the angel, both of them have shared the purpose of the issue. One destroys.
Yeah, one attacks it.
Protects it and gives a strength, so there's no feeling.
There you go. The one attacks it, the other seals it off and creates a whole kind of structure that sequesters it, doesn't allow
it. Back to what I just said a minute ago, sometimes feelings are too, I mean, that's what happens in infancy. When feelings are too intense, too overwhelming, then that protection from being able to feel them keeps it from being psychotic or disintegrating totally.
Well, look, the self-care system is in business to help us survive and to regulate too much that comes into the ego. The only problem with it is that it's convinced that any feeling at all will re-traumatize the person. Therefore, it's much too harsh, much too extreme, and much too spellcasting.
So we look for the antidote.
That's right.
When Lena shows up early on wearing as an angel, right?
Mm-hmm.
She's wearing white wings, black hat, gold halo, silver wings.
Yeah.
She's a child.
Yeah.
She's a dark angel. She's a bright angel.
Hmm.
I'm confused.
You're confused?
I'm confused.
Oh.
What all that means?
I didn't see that necessarily as a conflict. Just the fact that it's a sign that she's connected to the other world. She's got
a dark side and a light side.
Well, maybe. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, she's
the hat.
I see. I wouldn't be too.
For her hat.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily.
Her grandfather was the mediator.
Pardon?
Her grandfather was the mediator. He's the one that painted the angels.
Right.
And she was. He was her mediator to
the
other.